chagas be mekayim its mitzvahs properly. We have the unusual circumstance in this year Toshin Samachay. That Erev Pesach occurs on Shabbos. And consequently, it creates a set of very, very unusual halachos. The Mishnah begins in Psoch, the Moyel Arbaos, or Boykinas Achomet Loraner. On the night preceding the 14th of Nisan, one is to search for Chomets throughout the property that he controls, that's his. Loraner, with a candle of some type. And immediately, we're stuck. Or Larbo also, it's Friday night. So what are we going to do? We're going to take a candle Friday night and march around the house and do B'dikas Chametz. The Mishnah says in the first parak in Sochem that an Erev Pesach is Oichlin Kol Arba, we eat Chametz through the one third of the day. It's Sorfim Etchil Hashay, we Toilin Kol Chomish, and we can benefit from it but not eat it in the fifth hour of the day. Now how are we going to do that on Shabbos? It's nice to do a mitzvah, but it's not a there's no way that the mitzvah say of Tashbis Sohmi Boteichem is going to push aside Shabbos. Minyan Beis Hamikdash doesn't push aside Shabbos. So how are we to fulfill the mitzvahs of Pesach? And then on the other side of the scale, well, on one end it's Erev Pesach, but it's also Shabbos. Now Shabbos has its mitzvahs, and among the mitzvahs of Shabbos, certainly with the Ranavim, is the notion of Suda Shabbos. Now we cannot be Yaitzi Suda Shabbos, certainly not the first two Sudas, and preferably even the third, unless we wash and recite the Hamotzi. Well, how are we going to do that today? The simplest solution would have been if we could eat matzah on Erev Pesach, then everything would have been simple. But Chazal long ago prohibited eating matzah on Erev Pesach. We have to wait at least but a halacha throughout the day of Erev Pesach not to eat, and by varied minhagim from Rosh Chodesh, from Purim, but the din at least, the minimum, is Erev Pesach. How are we to fulfill Suda Shabbos? And then we have a question of Suda Shlishis. So that normally takes place in the afternoon after Mincha. Well, challah we can't have. Matzah we also can't have. What are we going to do now? So that's what is a whole siman in the Shulchan Aruch, which is devoted to how to conduct ourselves on Shabbos Erev Pesach. Well, up to the state legislature, would never happen. They would have rearranged it. So let's quickly go through the basics of the halacha. Be'ezus Hashem, before Yom Tov, you will receive something in writing as well as the members of the Kehila, and a written statement about all the procedures. But we'll go through quickly now. The B'dikas Chometz has to take place on the night preceding the 13th. So instead of Friday night, we push it back one night, Thursday night. Now, normally at the end of B'dikas Chometz, we do a bittel, the first bittel. The first bittel states that any Chometz, which I am unaware of and I'm not saving for particular use tomorrow, should be null and void. That bittel, we recite it upon the completion Thursday night of the B'dikas Chometz. The Bir Chometz, well, it can't take place on Shabbos, so it has to take place on Friday. Now, it's also a strange Bir Chometz, because after this Bir Chometz, many of us are going to have Chalas that we're going to keep for Shabbos, after Bir Chometz. Very strange. And the halacha is very interesting. We are creatures of habit. And therefore the halacha dictates that the preferable time to burn the chametz on Erev Pesach, on rather Friday, Erev Shabbos, is the same time that we would burn the chametz on any other during any other year, which means somewhere in the area of a little near 11 o'clock or so. There are varied views exactly what minute it is. But somewhere in that area, the precise manam will be forthcoming. Why? So that when we burn chametz in other years, we won't remember, oh, you know, I remember that year we burned the chametz at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. The fact that it was Erev Pesach, that Erev Pesach was the next day, that will get lost in the translation. So the Shulchan Aruch advises us to burn chametz at the very same time that we burn it during any other year, in the morning hours. But the question is, normally upon the completion of Bedikas chametz, we do Bittel chametz. But how am I going to do Bittel if I'm getting rid of all my chametz now and that's it, Friday morning, 11 o'clock, I'm finished with chametz, and now it's only going to be have Pesach food around, that's it. Okay, I can do Bittel chametz perhaps at that hour. But that's oftentimes not the intention. We intend, in fact, to have some benefit from chametz all the way up until Shabbos. It is not. So therefore, the Shulchan Aruch says that on Shabbos, before the fifth hour comes, we have to recite the Bittel. The Bittel has to take place at that hour. So thus, the mitzvahs which normally take place on the night of the 14th, two-thirds take place on the 13th. But with an adjustment that the final Bittel still does not take place until the 14th. Now in terms of the getting rid of leftover chametz, Baruch Hashem, we don't have much problem. If you live in a community with an Eruv, so what if there's anything left over, you put it into a garbage bag and put it outside on the curb. The curb is not our property, the garbage bag is not our property, it's Hefker, and that's it, we're rid of the problem. If it's a very small amount, you can flush it down. So we have little problem getting rid of it. I don't want to go into here to discuss the procedures in a place where there is no air. We will Hashem have an air. And I can give it away. When there's an air, I can readily give it to a non-Jew with no limitation. But even though we normally don't involve ourselves in transactions on Shabbos, but since it's for the sake of a mitzvah, it's permissible. And we could, for that reason, as Rabbonim, in fact, make the Mechiras Chometz on Friday, which we must do, make it on Shabbos with all the writing that's involved with the Osir, and if we could do it without that, it's controversial. So we're going to do it Friday, but we could make, in fact, execute it in a fashion that it will become valid on Shabbos itself. Now, Rav Gveiger in Masechet Beis tells us, he is of the view that if I execute a transaction to be completed and become valid on Shabbos, that is also a violation of the halacha of making a kinyan on Shabbos. Not only if I do the act, but even if it takes legal effect on Shabbos, that's also a violation of making a kinyan on Shabbos. That's what Rabbi Gveiger writes in Beis. But in our situation, since we're allowed to make a kinyan for a dvar mitzvah, it's the same reason on Yontif I could give my lulav and esrik to someone else on Yontif Rishon, even though he has to make a kinyan for a dvar mitzvah. For a dvar mitzvah, it's mutter. So we can sell the chametz on Friday, do the sale to take effect on Shabbos prior to the Zman Issa. Now, let's deal quickly with the sudos of Shabbos. How to conduct them. There are two choices of how to conduct sudos Shabbos. One can use challah for the Friday night meal and the Shabbos morning meal. And both the Knesiyas tend to daven early on Shabbos Erev Pesach. And thereby one would eat that obviously in some segregated place, because all the dishes that we should be using ought to be Pesach dishes, and all the food Pesach food. So it's not a milieu where we want to introduce crumbs of chametz. So we're going to eat the chametz in some segregated place, in the kitchen, on the porch, in the backyard, whatever it is, and then clean that away and wash ourselves off, and then we'll sit down to eat the rest of the food. So that's one particular method. There's a second method of those that don't want to have any chametz around, they don't want to be bothered with chametz, is they can use egg matzahs. If one uses egg matzahs, one should endeavor within 5 minutes of washing to eat a half an egg matzah, and during the rest of the meal, preferably to eat an additional egg matzah and a half, up to two egg matzahs, and at the very least, one egg matzah in totality. So preferably two, and at the very least, during the meal at least one. And that will suffice for Kviya Suda. And one can make recites down the Tulasidayim on it, and the Hamoitzi. And I am personally, certainly from the Mekilim, at least until Chatzos, to eat the Egg Matzah and Erev Pesach, particularly in this situation, in accordance with the view of the Rodu, in accordance with the view of the Rodu Behuda. And I have certain personal reasons in terms of Hilchos Brochus that I find it preferable, in fact, even if one eats challah, but during the meal itself, to allow the use of Egg Matzah. And then at the end of the meal, to recite the Birchas Hamotzi. If one has Egg Matzahs, then after, there's a question when Shalosh Shudas has to be conducted. Can I conduct Shalosh Shudas in the morning or not? Or must it be conducted after Chatzos? That's a debate among the Achrayim and Matadinus. So therefore, the Vilna Gaon suggests a solution, but this is only a solution for real Yekkes. Only for real Yekkes, or maybe for the Gro. And I mean, why do I say for the Gro? You know that the Gro davened every day of Pesikim, the entire year. 365 days a year. So, for the going standpoint, if he got up to daven kivasikin and he finished davening, he probably wasn't, you know, he probably had plenty of time until this Zman Yisr after he finished davening. You know, the rest of us are not going to get up so early to daven as the Gro. So the Gro suggested that the same way that some of the practice when Shabbos is the first day of Yonta, for example, that how do we eat the Shalosh Shudas? We're not supposed to eat late in the day. So some have the practice that they divide the morning Suda in two parts. They wash, they eat the fish, they bench, then they take a break for a while, 15, 20 minutes, and then they come back and they wash again and they eat the rest of the meal and thereby we eat the Shalosh Shudas. So that typically takes place on Yom Tov in the afternoon, in the early afternoon. The Goyim suggests doing that on Shabbos Erev Pesach as well. So again, that you need to be fayekish, so the type that gets up very early in the morning, that you get home, you get down to business right away. Because our estimate is, we have an hour and a half, you know, approximately to conduct the Suda. So if you get immediately to business, there'll be enough time to follow the sheet of the Gro. And that's one possibility. In the afternoon, it would still be wise to eat either a little meat, a little fish, a little fruit, preferably meat or fish to be used to Shalosh Shudas. If one has egg matzahs, so one could actually wash in the afternoon. And be soymech on that. And for the sake of Shalosh Shudas, I would allow, you know, I'm not necessarily in a normal Erev Pesach, but for this Erev Pesach, the one could be makel, in fact, like the shittas that allow the use, if that's one's minhag, to allow the use of egg matzahs even in the afternoon Erev Pesach. There were many, many rabbanim, this has been broadly debated. The Chofetz Chaim was not keen on using egg matzahs in Erev Pesach, it would seem. Baruch HaShulchan does not see eye to eye with that. My father, Olav HaShalom, Onsias Rav Eliezer Silva, Zichat Tzadik Livrocha, about eating egg matzah in Erev Pesach, and he gave him flat out psak that it's mutter the entire Erev Pesach, the entire day, and that was the minig, in fact, in our mishpacha. So certainly, for Shabbos Erev Pesach, one that wants to do it, is certainly a very fine solution that'll be yotze. Till Shah Asiris. Till the last quarter of the day. So approximately 5 o'clock or so, something like that, 4:30, in that range. But as I said, this manner will be forthcoming in the written. By the end of the fourth hour. You have to finish the chametz. You know, all you have to do is finish eating the chametz. You can keep on eating the meal after you finish eating the chametz. But you do have to finish by that time. Now, after one, if one eats the chametz, before one goes to eat, use the Pesach Nikki Kalim utensils, one should go to the bathroom or whatever and rinse out one's mouth well, and rinse out, wash one's hands, and shake one's clothing off, because you don't want to start eating for the chicken soup or the cholent on Shabbos and have a crumb, and find that there's a crumb in your mouth, you know, with the Pesach spoon and the hot soup and the knedel. That's not going to be too keen.
Is there any issue with egg matzah with that?
No, no, you don't have to. No, you do not have to be machmor for that, for the egg matzah.
The Rebbe just mentioned about washing on the porch, eating the bread on the porch, and then continuing the suit inside the house.
Yeah,
would that be a problem? You can't see the same spots.
You hadn't asked. So maybe it. You know, that's one of the mylas why I prefer that to eat. You know, if you're a little makel and egg matzah, eat a little bit inside. So you hadn't asked to change places. You ate a little bit of something which has a din pass inside. So you know, with that, at least you know, with the effort to be yotze with that, you know. that's the basics of Shabbos Erev Pesach. Ironic.
What the Rav just mentioned confused me. But the egg matzahs you can eat on Pesach dishes with Pesach pizza.
Yeah, you don't have to be concerned Erev Pesach about eating them. Correct. There's no issue at all with that thing. Now, I want to go through the basics of kashering. And it's a lot easier to talk about it than it is to actually do. Then I'll tell you.
Especially with children.
And as I always said, if one wishes to understand the divine nature of the Torah, all that's necessary is to consider what this Chag is about. There's no human being that would have dared to dream this up. This can only come from the Rabbeinu Shalom himself. And I say there's a reason for it. Imagine, you know, every one of us, when it comes to Erev Pesach, we're about tshuva. The house is treif. Everything is literally treif. Every glass is treif. Every spoon is treif. The oven is treif. The sink is treif. Everything's treif. And I have to kasher the house to be able to eat in it. And the reason is because Rabbi Yisrael Nisan is the month of Ischachas. Nisan Asidin Ligol, the Gemara said, is based on the view that the world was Nisan was Nivra Olam. Pesach is Ischachas. That's why it's Chodesh Aviv. And basically, one message of Pesach is that we should not grow complacent. Whatever we've done until now is fine. But if we consider setting a chart for the future, in one regard we have to view the whole thing as truth. We have to kasher everything and start again from scratch. There was a Rebbe that was considering making Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael many years back. He wasn't sure if he should do it or not, so he wrote to one of his chaverim, another Rebbe that lived already in Eretz Yisrael. So his chaver wrote back to him the following. He said, if you are prepared to come to Eretz Yisrael and begin your entire avodah again from scratch, from the beginning, then come. If you want to come here and just stay where you were in Chutz La'aretz without a radically new beginning, he said, stay home in Chutz La'aretz. It's not the place. Pesach, Rabbi Zeh, is a schachas. Whatever was until now was fine. But in terms of setting our course for the future, we have to look upon it in a certain regard as if it all has to be cleaned up. To kasher it all. So let's go through the basics of kashering. I don't have much new to report to you. The Shulchan, the Metzias didn't change too much in the last year. The Shulchan Aruch didn't change, certainly not in the last year. So basically, the Pesachim are the same. I do wish to bring to your attention, though, a couple of issues. Instant coffee, particularly, you have to be sure that it has a Pesach Hechsher, or that in one of the reputable Pesach pamphlets of the National Kashrus Organizations that it's been checked out and approved, because it has been discovered that there are in fact instant coffees which contain maltodextrin, and maltodextrin is probably kidneys, but it may actually even be chometz, depending where it was made in the world. So that's number one. Number two, if you find salads of the Star K, whether they have the P on them for Pesach or not, as long as they have the Star K symbol on them, they are actually kosher for Pesach. They are not processed with anything which has any kshash chametz on them whatsoever, and they are kosher for Pesach. So whatever you'll find in the market, as long as it has the Star K on it, whether it has the P on it or not. Baby carrots, for example, one should buy only with a particular hechsher for Pesach, because the whitening agents that are used to keep it from turning black, to keep maintain its color, there is a chshash on them, either of kidneys or of chametz. There are chshashes on them, and therefore they should be purchased under specific Pesach hashkafa. The vintage seltzer, which I'm asked usually a million times about every year, is 100% kosher. It is made in the same plant that all the national brands under the national hashkafas are made under the well recognized national brands. The flavorings that are used are all come from the same flavor house, and they're produced under Star K Hashgacha. So if you're buying any of those seltzers in this area, in the New York metropolitan area, no matter what label you're buying them under, whether it's the OU, it's the vintage, whatever it is, you're drinking exactly the same thing. It's made in exactly the same factory and under the same Hashgacha with the same ingredients.
Even the flavored
The flavored vintages are fine, yes. They're made, the flavorings in vintage are all the same ones. They're made in the same plant, from the flavors, from the same flavor house, which is a sake, under the sake. What? If they have appropriate ashgach, I don't have any problems with them. I'm not, you know, I'm aware of all the tumors. I don't hold from the tumors. The question is, there are those that do not like one of the ingredients that the OU allows to be used in the Diet Coke. I mean, I do not agree with the Misnagdim. I believe that the OU is correct. Now, that's a few issues of product information. Now, let's turn to actual kashering itself. First, let's deal with stovetops. I have this good news and bad news. And this is not a joke, this is for real. The good news is that if you have a conventional gas or electric stovetop, kashering is relatively easy. Relatively. And a gas stovetop, obviously, you have to clean it well. After it's clean, take aluminum foil, cover the grates one by one, not more than two at once. Do not cover the entire stovetop at once, because the heat that it will generate is strong enough to singe the enamel. Cover one burner or two, each one separately and independently. Put them on for 15 to 20 minutes, and they're rendered kosher. Do that with the other ones that you have, and subsequent to that is cover the stovetop.
At maximum, or?
Doesn't have to be. Set it just below where the flame will strike the aluminum foil. You don't want it to strike the aluminum. It's going to burn it through. It'll lose its effectiveness if you do that. It'll be much less effective. Set the flame a little below the aluminum foil. And
one.
You don't need, usually, if you put it, a little tent, you make a little tent and you use a heavy duty foil, not a light one, the extra heaviest one you could find. No, it does not. If you use a light one, it'll float up. A heavier one usually was not going to float up, in my experience. If it does float up, it's a stone on something on top of it to keep it down, you know. A stone, a pebble. Now, after that, one should cover the stovetop. Stovetops do not tend to be kasherable, and it should be covered. Plus the little trays which go under the grates should also be covered. The grates themselves don't have to be covered. The area, the jets should be washed off. You don't have to do anything to kasher them. If you have inside the oven places that chametz collect, I mean, you don't have to go nuts about it, but if there are drawers, whatever, that come in, if you can open it up and clean it out, it's certainly a good idea to clean it out. But again, it's not a thing to go crazy about, because it's sort of one way. What goes down doesn't come up again in this particular case, you know? You know, the opposite of what normally takes place.
What about the things over the jet that directs the flames, the little round thing?
That's fun. You don't have to do anything with that. No, I happen to be, now the handles themselves, the controls, if you can, either wash them well, like soak them in a little bit of ammonia, wash them well, or if you have different ones of Pesach, certainly fine, but they do need to be washed well or covered with some aluminum foil, because we touch them with sticky hands, chametz spills on them the entire year. And consequently, we ought to do something, you know, to clean them up for Pesach. And the one thing I do advise, if you have an electric stovetop, certainly do not spill hot water on it. The guy that fixes the appliances, believe me, he's praying that you spill hot water on it, you know. And he can't keep up with the amount of calls he has from this and our Pesach. Now, just as an aside, where else you shouldn't spill hot water, you know, on bite plates and retainers, you also should not spill hot water. They'll get destroyed, according to the professionals. So those that have bite plates and retainers should wash them out and not use them with chametz in the last day before Yom Tov. If one has braces, I recommend that they not eat chametz for 24 hours before the Zman Yisr chametz, meaning starting from Friday morning about 10 o'clock or so. And someone came to me, why I'm such a big machmer in this halacha of braces. Most people say, stop Erev Yom Tov. So I consulted with the Frum orthodontist, and they said, Rabbi, you're a big meikel, you're not a big machmer. Food can actually stay inside the braces in his experience for 4 to 5 days. So good. There's reason as time goes on that perhaps it loses its status as food, etc. But one should avoid, if one has braces, any chametz, liquid, solids, whatever, do not eat chametz for 24 hours before.
If you change the actual grill itself,
If you change the grates, so you certainly, you don't have to kasher them. You just have to cover the rest, correct. Now, if you have an electric, when you are covering the top, please be careful if you have an oven under it, you don't have a wall oven, you have an oven built in, not to block the vents. The oven works properly when it's vented, so you have to punch holes where the vent holes are. Now, in general, you should be careful that if the, in some stoves, the venting comes up under one of the burners. Now, if that's the case, you have to be careful what you put there. If you're making meat inside there, you don't want it venting onto a parabar, onto a milchika pot. So that needs, in general, care the whole year. Now, if you have a glass top oven, not such good news. Glass tops are very, very hard to kasher. Now, there are a couple of different types of glass tops. Now, there are glass tops which are flat, and the flat ones are the worst of all because they're made in a fashion that they have hot spots and they're well insulated not to get hot anyplace else. And therefore, there's no means really of koshering them. The ones that are elevated do tend to get hotter than others, and you can, so both of them, if you cover over at least the spot where the burner actually is, where the heat comes up, are kosher, that part is kosherable. But glass tops are a very big problem because they are not made to bear the heat which comes from being covered. And one of my Hasidish friends bought an oven and he put it on Shabbos and he put a blech on, and I came to his house Sunday and he showed me it was shattered. It just disintegrated from the heat. It's not made to bear such types of heat. So if you have it, you have troubles, you know. Your best bet, if you really want to know, is probably to call the company and see if you can buy a whole new glass top to place a hole together. That probably is, which is very common in areas you saw people do. You know, they buy an oven, and when they buy an extra top. In Pesach, they change the top entirely. They take off the one they use the whole year. They find out from the dealers. I don't know. I just, if it's possible. If not, it's really, it's a, anyone that has the problem will figure out what to do as best we can. But the problem is you cannot, it's very, it's the type of material that you really can't cover. And if you cover it, could disintegrate. That's the problem. Now, let's go to the sinks. Once you kosher the stovetop, so then you're in business. Because in home koshering, what? We'll come to the oven. That's not the out of order. There's a seder, you'll see. There's method to the madness, although I will admit maybe there's madness to the method too. But now, yes. Rain hoods should be washed and covered. In my house, we cover it entirely with aluminum foil. And I just would advise not, if you have places which are like with painted enamel, do not put the tape to stick on there, because sometimes when you take the tape off, you'll take the paint off also. So try to attach it to the closets, etc., something aluminum, but not in the painted surfaces. But we cover over in my house the hood.
So the vent also, you cover it, then you don't use it?
We don't use it at all, Pesach, correct. Yeah. Once you have hot water is the most essential thing you need to produce the kasher in the house. You know, since I don't think you should use a blowtorch in your house, it's not the environment for it, there's too many flammable things, it's not a commercial kitchen, which is made to a large extent with materials which are not flammable, and nor are you professional in dealing with it, it's not a good mix. So forget about it. What you ought to do is, okay, is all you need a hot water and just other things which exist in the kitchen, but don't bring a torch. And once you have hot water, now your sink comes in one or two possibilities. Your sink can be a stainless steel sink or it could be an enamel sink. If it's a stainless steel sink, then, and with all sinks, close the hot water 24 hours before. You want the kasher. Whatever day you're going to kasher, and I would advise you to close the check valve under the sink, so that somebody doesn't come by and inadvertently put it on when you spilled some chametz in there, because you're still going to be using it for chametz, and then put on the hot water, and then it's shyless of koshering it. So close the check valve 24 hours before. No hot water in the kitchen sink. Boil water in a Pesach tikka kettle, and pour it over inch by inch every single part of that sink. Pour it down the drain as well. And you should also pour something caustic down the drain, a little bleach, a little ammonia, not bleach and ammonia together, it's a bad mix. You know, ask the chemist, it doesn't work too, it's not pleasant. And one has to be careful as well to pour out water on the spout, the spout to all types of things. We drain spaghetti and water splashes on the spout throughout the year. All types of chomet stuff we spill into the sink, so we have to kasha the spout. We have to kasha underneath the spout as well, like to take the kettle and go upwards a little bit so they get hot water on the bottom of the spout as well. The aerator you should change. It costs you all of about $1 in town to buy a new aerator, because there are some things in there which is really one should not kasha for Pesach. Now, in a porcelain sink, you should do all the things I told you above. But after that, you have to line it, either with one of the commercially available liner, or with aluminum foil, whatever you like. Now,
yeah.
One other thing, and that is that if you use a plug, a stopper in the sink, you should replace the stopper for the undifter. Yes. Oh, that's if you use a stainless steel sink and you put hot pots directly from the stovetop or the oven into the sink, then there's an additional requirement for kashering. And that additional requirement is what we call an Eben Meluban, meaning that a hot pot is considered like a Kli Rishon. A Kli Rishon, it means the primary vessel which was on the fire cannot be kashered by pouring hot water on it. It can only be kashered with the heat of the fire itself. So consequently, it would not suffice to pour hot water into the sink, because the pot which made it, chomet stick, had the status of a Kli Rishon. So it's as if we cooked in the sink itself. So therefore, if one did that, what one has to do is to heat a stone and take it with a plier, and as one pours the water, go over it with the hot stone so that the water sizzles off. And it steams off, and go over spot by spot, and then it's kosher for Pesach. If you don't want to do that, just cover it, then line the stove.
If you would ever put a pot like just on the edge of the sink, like to drain it, in other words, not...
So then that part either you should cover, that part, right.
Or use the stone just on that
part. On that part, yes, it could be soymach on that, not to do more than that.
Are you saying that if you kosher an enamel sink the way you described, not have to cover it?
I said you should line it anyhow. I recommend koshering it. We have never figured out halachically what the status of enamel is, if it's kosherable or not. There are some that say yes and some that say no, and therefore we leave it, the halacha leaves it as a gray area. Yes, correct. Correct. Ronnie.
If you have a sink spout that's metal, aluminum, it pulls out, but then also there's an area built in, like you push a button on the top, and the water comes out of the bottom in a spray, but that's a plastic piece underneath. And it's built in, though. So
if you...
Hot water?
Now, normally hot water goes through there, right?
Yeah.
So I would presume that it's not that it will not be destroyed by putting hot water on it. That's my assumption.
Splashing it with hot water.
Yes, yeah, splash hot. So splash hot water on it, and that you could be soymech on. For plastic, we do not normally kasher plastic for Pesach. It is a machlokas about it. The most normal view is not to kasher plastic for Pesach. Rav Breish, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, the Chelkes Yaakov, the Rav of Tzirach from Zurich, allowed kashering plastic even for Pesach. And Ramosha was sort of in the middle. Ramosha said that if the plastic is only a small portion of the vessel being kashered, the halacha in kashering follows what the primary material with which it's made is. So therefore, if it's metal, basically, and there's a little piece of plastic, one is allowed to kasher it for Pesach. Now, the spray device, I don't recommend that you use on Pesach. It has non-kasherable parts in there, unless you could replace all of them. So they should not be used for Pesach.
And if you have a hot water
dispenser, don't use for 24 hours for chametz. Dump hot water on the outside, then let the water go out from it, and that's all. And that's all you need to do. The halacha is very interesting. The halacha states that something which is used as a Kli Rishon, so you have to, let's say I used it at 180 degrees. I have to kasher it, though, nevertheless, it's boiling at 212. Somebody that comes from the Chuvas Marshal. The reason for this is obscure. So Ramosha Zecher Tzadik Livracha, that preeminent genius of the halacha, he divined the reason for this too. A very beautiful reason. He said the reason that we have to kasher 212 with boiling is because since it's conceivable that we could in fact use it at a hotter temperature, maybe at some time during the year we used it at a hotter temperature, we just don't recollect. They said, what will happen if there's a governor on there, which limits the temperature? So then I don't have to go up to 212 to kasha. Now these things, these waters have a governor. They stop at 190. They're made not to boil out because they don't want them to, otherwise they'll self-destruct. So therefore it's enough just to run the hot water through, even though it won't reach 212, but since it's by governor, it can't go above that temperature, so it's not a problem.
Yeah, but if you let the hot, you said, pour water over it, don't use it for 24 hours, pour water over it, and then let some hot water come out.
Yeah.
At that point, that hot water that you're letting come out, could come and stick up your sink if you cash it.
So do it before.
Do it before.
Once it hasn't been used for 24 hours and it's before Pesach, it's not going before Pesach. If you didn't use it for 24 hours, it's not going to trace the sink up. Because before Pesach, even we Ashkenazim were very machmer in this halacha, we allow noisim tam lidgam, that chometz, which is more than 24 hours old, doesn't render something trace before Pesach. Now, let's go to ovens. Yeah. Yeah. From a kosher case of kettle, yeah. On the top, on the bottom, whatever. Splash on the bottom, pour on the top, etc. Yeah, Richard.
How do you heat the stone?
Heat the stone and you put it directly into the flame of a fire. Take off one of the burners, put it in the flame, and then take it with the pliers and very carefully. You don't want to hurt yourself, you know. It's not, you know, one of life's pleasant tasks. Now, let's go to ovens, Rabbi Yisai.
Cold water doesn't
allow to use cold water even in the last 24 hours. Yes, as long as you don't.
Then you take the kettle from the cold water.
Yes. Now, let's deal with ovens. Ovens come in two types for our purposes. There are self-cleaning ovens and non-self-cleaning ovens. And on the almost 20 years that I've been here, we went from a few self-cleaning ovens to an overwhelming percentage of self-cleaning ovens. Because there's no self-respecting balabusta that will redo the kitchen without putting in a self-cleaning oven, you know. And that lends itself to a lot easier kashering between milchus and leishis and for Pesach. So let's deal with them. First of all, those self-cleaning ones, lidaiti, it suffices. Put them on for 3 hours with the racks inside. And that's kosher, and that's even for the doors as well. If you see residues that haven't completely burned, you should scrub them and then put it on again. But so if you really, it's very dirty before, but in general, before you put on a self-cleaning cycle, or do any kashering, you do not want to have much residue in that oven. Because otherwise, you're going to wind up in a situation that I mentioned to you before, a guy I know, he put his oven up to kasher it, and the smoke started, the flame started pouring out of the vent, because there was fat in the bottom that caught fire. So before you start the kasher, you want to clean the oven up. Now that suffices for the door as well, at 19. Now, if you don't have a self-cleaning oven, then what you need to do is the following. You have to clean it. You have to put it on between an hour and a half at the highest temperature with a pan of aluminum foil pan on the bottom with water to steam up. And put hot water into that pan. Don't put cold water, otherwise it's never going to work. Now, the racks you should take and put into a self-cleaning oven. Get someone for one cycle, 3 hours. Now, after all of that, one should still line the oven. Now the best way to line the oven is with aluminum foil, but it's very, very well. You make a U and go all the way around with heavy duty aluminum foil, and the U then you can support another U which you put over for the roof, and then you cover the floor and the door. And before I had a self-cleaning oven, we sort of perfected this in my house. It's not so hard to do, and the oven will work at its best that way. The oven boxes are a very daunting challenge. The balabustas don't like them because the oven to work, while the racks are not solid in the oven for a reason. And the reason is that the heat has to circulate to be able to make the oven work properly. And if you were to close box it, it's very, very hard. It takes forever for that box to get hot because the heat doesn't circulate properly. Now, broilers, again, put on for an hour to an hour and a half to burn them, clean them. Then put them on to an hour and a half. You want to use the broiler compartment and take the racks and put the racks in a self-cleaning oven as well. The most that will happen with racks is they may discolor slightly, but they will not be ruined in my experience. Refrigerators. Yeah, Ronnie.
Convection, microwave oven combination can't.
I'll talk separately about it. Let's go over the exact procedures. There's a way to kosher it, whatever. If you do, you know, there is a way to do it. Self-cleaning or not?
I don't know. Self-cleaning?
No, I don't know. Okay, I'll speak to the person that has it separately what to do with. You can basically kosher it the way you kosher a regular oven. Now, in general, I'm not a fan of using microwaves, but in this case, whatever, just as an aside. Here, where the microwave is actually the walls of the oven itself, I don't see that there'll be more than ones you kasher it for Pesach. You know, I don't know if it works, if you're going to put aluminum foil inside it. I don't know how it works exactly, these microwaves. I'm not 100%.
It's the metal.
What?
The one that I have is the walls of the oven.
Oh, metal, yeah. Now, can you put a pan inside in that? Most microwaves you can't put a pan in. That microwave you can put a pan in. For a microwave.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just not familiar with it, but you can. What its limitations are. But, yeah. Benji. Yeah. Whatever. I'm from the Mekila. Okay.
What about outside the door? Because
around the seal, one should clean very well. You know, go with, around the outside, yeah. Now, the refrigerators are one of the easier jobs to do. I mean, basically, refrigerators have to be washed, and that's it. Some are annoying to line them, and the lining is a problem because the air does not always function so well when it's lined because the air doesn't circulate properly. But if you take pots, hot pots, and put them directly onto the shelves during the year, then you have to line them for Pesach. You have no choice.
Only the Yatzoletis for pots.
Yeah, we're talking hot pots.
You know, take
warm. Not warm. We're talking about the Yatzoletis.
Your shelves are glass.
Your shelves are glass. Yeah. So the same thing is wash them off. I mean, if you put pots on them, you're talking.
Yes.
Hot pots.
Yatzoletis. Yes.
So then cover them. If you put a Yatzoletis pot on it, cover it. That's
it.
Yeah, they're already solid. Correct. Now, one thing you do have to remember with refrigerators, Shmuel knows already, is the gasket on the top tends, the gasket tends to get all types of dirt. So to clean the gasket on the top well, and the part that's really above one's eyesight, because there's a lot of times you find crumbs there.
Now,
the gasket are on the outside of the fridge. On the, all around it, particularly on the top where you don't see. Climb up there. You'll be surprised what you find up there. Hang on one second. Now, dishwashers are to the largest extent not kosherable unless you have a stainless steel one. And then you need separate racks for it. You can't kosher the racks for Pesach. So to the largest extent, you don't kosher dishwashers for Pesach. Microwaves are not really kosherable because they're all plastic inside. And the truth of the matter is, they've become so inexpensive today. For $40, you can buy a microwave. As it happens to be this year, there's 4 days Chol HaMoed. It could come out to be very useful. But in general, I am not a proponent of koshering. Utensils are hard to kosher properly. There's a whole roster of halachas, plus they have to be clean. Plus, if they have curved rims on the top, curled rims, you can't kasher them for Pesach. So glass, we don't kasher for Pesach. So it's just not worthwhile in today's world. In today's world, it's worth investing and having everything separate for Pesach. About the only thing that I sign off on is bechers, you know, okay, people, becher is also not really used with chometz. It's only a chumrah that we kasher because we're afraid it might have been washed, which it tends to get, and a chometz to kasing, maybe with some chometz splashed on it. So that, clean it well, and that to kasher. But besides that, to the largest extent, I am not the proponent of kashering. Now, countertops we haven't talked about. Now, countertops usually are common a number of types. If they're actually made of real stone, I'm not talking like Korean, something which is ground and mixed with minerals and put back together again, like from matzo milk, you know? That's what it is, Korean. And you read as much literature as you read from the company about what it is, you still can't figure out what it is. Well, you found that it's a stone matzo milk mixed with other ingredients and somehow put back together again. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about if you have real stone, like you have granite, marble, whatever. Countertop, despite the fact that they have a seal, once you pour hot water on them, inch by inch, they become kosher. Don't use them for 24 hours before. Pour hot water on them, they're kosher for Pesach. You don't have to cover them at all. If you're not zoyche, they have stone.
Hot pots on the granite.
What?
Hot pots on the granite.
If you put hot pots directly on the granite, you'd have an malubim, the same as we described for the sink, if that's what you do. Now, if you're not zeicha, you're one of the
stone. You have to, while you're pouring the water,
you pour and you move the stone along. As long as it continues steaming the water off, it's fine. When it stops, you got to put it back in the fire and switch to another stone.
You pour the water and
then you push the stone right on top of the water, right? Now, it steams. It steams right up. You'll see. You'll know right away. When it stops steaming, it's time to change. Now, so count if you're not zeicha that stone. I pour hot water in our house on the countertops, and then we cover all of them. And it's also important around the stovetop and around the countertops to cover the splashbacks, because there's a lot of interaction between food splashing up there and kind of falling back down into the air work areas where we are preparing Pesach Tikkun foods. Right, the wall too. We cover the wall. We put plastic. It's around 12, 14 inches we put up. And anything which is likely when you're working to splash, we cover with plastic. You know, I don't put plastic by the oven. The oven we put, you know, aluminum foil in the splashbacks. But by the countertops, we put plastic all around. All around the sides and the top. You know, the sides and the back. So in case anything splashes, it's clean surface.
The top, the back, or about the corner?
What?
Around the stove.
What? On the countertops also, we cover the backs and the sides, yeah. If I have something on the side, the refrigerator's on one side, whatever it is, we try to cover that up.
The lid
too, we cover the edge in front, we certainly cover, yeah. Now, lest I should note that something which is very good to have on Yom Tov, if you have one, for Chol HaMoed, a gas grill. You get yourself a new gas grill. It's very good, you know, to use. You can barbecue something, whatever, in Chol HaMoed. You can make it out back. Give you a little extra space when you're preparing for Yom Tov to prepare. They're also inexpensive. You can buy the gas canisters, whatever, also rather inexpensively. Now, tables, there's not much to do with tables. Basically, tables you have to wash. If you want to be real frum about it, you then pour hot water on it. If you don't, you know, because after you pour, no matter what you pour on it, I'm going to tell you to cover it anyhow. So if it's a wood tabletop, I'm not going to tell you to pour hot water. If it's formica and you want to be frum, pour hot water on it. The main thing is to clean it well. If you have a table that opens up in the middle, is open it up and clean out the crack, and you'll mine enough comets in there for a small factory. And then cover it. Cover it well. Something enough thickness. You know, it has some thickness. Yeah, but usually on not much difference. Tables usually, once you cover them, they stay covered. Nothing's going to get uncovered about them. Counters is a lot of heavy work. When that table, you cover it, it's usually till Motzi Pesach, it's fine. It's staying that way. Countertops, there's a lot of heavy work that goes on. Things get exposed by mistake, they touch, etc. So you have a better, you know, you have a backup. Sure. You have an insurance, yeah. Now, in general, sforim, which are used around the table throughout the year, should not be used Pesach around the table. You should have separate benches for Pesach that you didn't use during the year, self-evidently. Baby bottles should be replaced for Pesach, buy new ones, and wash them in the bathroom, because they do have kidneys. The formulas can be used, but again, with separate kalim for them, not in the sink itself. Tablecloths, well, if they wash fully clean, then you could use the ones that you use throughout the year. If they remain with stains, you should really use different, then you should use different ones, not use the ones that you use during the year.
The plastic covers need a
heksha? No, the plastics does not need a heksha. And the styrofoam is kosher for Pesach and kosher for the whole year.
If you put plastic on the tablecloth, you're going to have a stain, is that okay?
Yes, if it's going to be covered with plastic all the time. But if it's covered with plastic, it's fine. As long as nothing will come. You know, usually, you're not going to have something that hot that you're going to put directly on a plastic. So it's not going to be, I don't see where the problem would lie. Yeah, hot, you're not going to put directly on it, you know. I don't think that's going to happen. Yeah, and if you have a chash, put two plastics and that's all. You'll certainly be fine. Paper goods, basically the story of this, and you'll find in all the books, I mean, the basic story on paper goods is it's better to use the plastic than the cheap paper plates, the real plastic plates. The hot cups are fine, the styrofoam are fine. No, don't use the plastic ones. You know, the paper ones, which are plastic coated, don't use those. The paper towels is the problem, ones with the glue. It's at the beginning, at the end, throw away. The rest are fine. you know, I think we covered the basic ground, Rabbi Yisrael.
Just going back.
If you do have Shaila, now, one other note that I should make, I would not be responsible of me not to make, is the following. And that is, if someone is taking a medicine, which they need to take for, you know, for a serious medical issue, do not stop taking that medicine under any circumstances unless you get a heter from a rov not to take, to allow you not to take it. You know, what goes on is unfortunate, and you have people, for example, I was speaking with a frum doctor, and he tells me there are patients that are on digitalis, or sakonos nefoshes, they don't take it, and they don't want to take it Pesach, you know? So that's it's exactly the pills particularly is really not much chash mitzaradin with them, and consequently, if you on a medicine for a serious issue, do not stop taking it until you have a head to from a roof. Rabbi Zai, best brachos, bracha kosher, b'sameach. I hope we'll come together next Tuesday night for a look at the Haggadah Be'ezus Hashem.